Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is Ed Bazzani with Business Conversations with Ed Bazzani Jr. I want to thank my guest, that's an outstanding guest that we're going to listen to today and learn about. She is the CEO. She's a podcaster, a coach, a personal trainer, an author, a speaker, Christy Ogle, the CEO of Sometimes Spouse and the co-founder of Jennyism of the Day. How are you, Christy?
I'm amazingly well.
Great. I'm glad to hear that. So tell us your story.
So I began with Sometimes Spouse about 6 years ago. I was sitting at my desk and I was getting ready for the day and my phone rings and it was my baby brother in Missouri and I was in Texas. And he said, "Grandma's fallen ill. She's not going to make it through the night." I said, "I'll be up there in 10 hours. And so I went right into my boss and I said that I had to go. I had to go say goodbye to my grandmother. She helped raise me. I grew up on the farm. My parents were both in college or working when I was a kid. And this is the woman I spent the most time with from 0 to 18. It was Gran. Mm-hmm. And she's the one that instilled in me to work and work hard. I was always in trouble, so she made me do stuff around the farm to stay out of trouble. And so I went into my boss, and my boss said, "I'm sorry, you can't leave." And I said, "I've got to go. This is my grandmother." And she said, "No, you're the only one here that can do your job.
Wow.
If you leave, you won't have a job." Now, I had 3 babies at the time. And also a mortgage to pay. And so I made a very difficult choice that day to stay at work and work. Thank God, my little brother was a millennial, and he hooked up Skype with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I Skyped my grandmother in the hotel room, or in the hospital room that night. And I said, you know, goodbyes to Grandma. And she was saying goodbye to me because we knew it was going to happen. And she knew it was time. She was 94 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And she said to me, her last words were, "Christy, you have an amazing family. You have 3 beautiful children, a husband who adores you. Always put your family first." And man, that was like a kick in the gut, Ed.
Oh, yes.
Because I hadn't done it that day. I put that paycheck first. That's what was most important to me.
Yeah, it's so difficult in business because you're balancing just as you said, like putting your family first, trying to make a profit, and being a mother of 3, you also had to take in consideration, like, I need to make sure I help put food on the table and take care of the bills of the house. So it's not an uncommon struggle. I'm an entrepreneur myself, and I deal with that on a regular basis. So what inspired you from that happening to come up with Sometimes Spouse? Was it like that kick in the gut? Or?
Yeah, well, I was working for somebody else. Somebody else was my boss. I was a social worker back then.
Really?
So I really didn't have control. I didn't have any freedom, any flexibility. And I was working for about $12 an hour as a social worker in the state of Texas. So that's what happened. That day happened, and I decided that I wanted to put family first. That was the most important thing to me, was putting family first. And from that, I went back, I started looking at my life, and I realized I was living a kind of box life where I would wake up in the morning, I would go and make a box cereal, I would drive a box on the way to work, I would work on the box all day long, so I drive the box home, and I was not putting my family first. We need a box dinner because we were living paycheck to paycheck with that just over broke job.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'd watch the box for 3 or 4 hours a night, and that was my life. I wasn't putting my family first. I was living a box life. And one night when I was watching the box, Lester Holt came on the TV and he started talking about this woman in the South that had opened an organization business, and she had left her full-time job to do this organization business. And when she started doing this organization business, she realized that she could replace her income and put her family first. So I thought, well, I don't want to do an organization business. I'm not good at organizing, but I can clean houses. I had 3 kids, right?
Yeah.
My husband was handy. So my best friend and I started cleaning, and my husband started doing the handyman work. So that night, sometime spouse, the idea of it was born, and we launched the business within 3 weeks.
Wow, that's really quick.
The day of idea. Yeah, it is really quick.
So, but I guess my question to you is, since you're an entrepreneur, you and your husband, you have a family business, it seems like you're wildly successful with it. When you started noticing like, hey, this really is going to work. What did you and your husband decide to do? Because you obviously are giving more time to your family, but like, was there any big, epiphany moments where you're like, wow, we're really making this work. We should do this next.
We actually, we started doing it with our full-time jobs because I was a social worker. Crystal was a social worker and my husband, was a Harley Davidson mechanic. And mm-hmm. We just did it about 10 to 12 hours a week to make a couple hundred dollars extra a month. And we just kept doing that. And then after about 6 months, we replaced our full-time incomes and we thought, oh, we really have something here. So we really need to focus on building the business. And we started working a little bit more. So it actually took a little bit of time away from the family in the beginning. Mm-hmm. But after about a year, 8 months to a year, my husband left his full-time job to do sometimes spouse full-time. And then a few months later, I left. And a few months after that, Crystal left.
Wow.
And after that first full year, it replaced our full-time income and tripled them mm-hmm. in sales. We decided we really, really had something. And in the following year is when we started franchising sometimes spouse.
So tell me about franchising, because I'm kind of curious, what was your experience with setting up your master franchise, getting franchisees? How did that work for you?
We don't allow master franchises. The only master franchise is franchisor, which is Max Crystal and I.
Okay.
So when we set that up, we decided that from the very beginning. We actually encountered somebody from an estimate. His name is Patrick Baldwin, who franchised with 855 Bugs. And he said, have you ever thought about franchising? And we said, oh, yeah, 5 or 10 years. And he said, no, you need to do it now. And so we met with him, and we sat with him a couple of hours every single week, and he'd give us homework every single week to put systems and operations and strategy behind everything that we were doing and sometimes spouse. So we actually sat down and buckled up for 6 weeks.
Wow.
And we grinded, and we got the franchise process in place, because it is a lot of legal documents.
Mm-hmm.
It is a lot of systems and operations and support. And sales is totally different for a franchise than for a handyman and household business.
How so?
We actually, it's a totally different business model. So your handyman and household services, you sell it in one way. It's
okay.
A certain target market you're going after for your handyman and your household business. And then you have a totally different kind of target market when you're going into franchising. When you're going into franchising, your target market is somebody that wants to do what you've done, somebody that you want to duplicate. It's not somebody that's just going to write a check and sit at home and do nothing. What we were looking for is people that wanted to do what Crystal, Max, and I had done,
mm-hmm.
put their family first, and also they have to be financially able to do that and put the money behind the business. So it's a little bit different in franchising than just handyman and household services. But every business that we have, because we have multiple businesses, you have to look at the target market. You really have to see who your ideal customer is. You have to find out where they're at and then get to marketing to them.
Gotcha.
Now, we knew that with handyman and household services, so it was pretty easy, and we had our first sale within 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
When we started franchising, it was a little bit different because the target market wasn't in the Waco area, so I actually started traveling to sell franchises, and it took about 6 months to get our first franchise.
Was it very expensive to set up your franchise, or is that like kind of a myth?
A lot of people think that it is very expensive to franchise. And if you hire franchising attorneys to build your FDD, if you hire a lot of people that have never done what you've done before, it can be very expensive. But we live in a land of Waco, Texas, where mm-hmm. there's franchisors all over. Curbs came out of Waco, Texas. They had over 14,000 franchises. Swire Group came out of Waco, Texas. They're the largest service-based franchisor kind of in the world. Mm-hmm. They have 28 brands, I believe, now. So we actually started meeting, and Bugs.com came out of Waco, Texas. So we started meeting and getting meetings with people that have been in franchising, mm-hmm. and they helped us hook up with the right people so it wouldn't be $250,000 or $500,000 to franchise sometimes fast. We got in touch with the right people who mentored us mm-hmm. and helped us to get where we wanted to go in the beginnings of the franchising.
Nice. Were you excited about franchising, or did it kind of scare you and your partners initially?
Oh my God. It totally scared me. It scared my partners also. And still sometimes it scares me to death some of the things that happen in franchising. It just, if what you're doing isn't a little bit scary, you're doing the wrong thing. In business, I get a little bit spooked all the time.
I can appreciate that, because you never know what the issue is going to be. So, that's a very honest answer, and thank you for sharing that. So you have this franchise. You also mentioned you have other businesses on the side. I noticed one of the business is actually, you're the co-founder of Jennyism of the Day. Now, I know your name is not Jenny. Where does that come from?
So my personal trainer, her name is Jenny, and I've went to her for about 3.5 years, and I love her, but man, I hate her. And during the workout, she'll say things like, give it 10% more. Everybody's got 10% more. Just do it. Or she'll say something funny, and she doesn't realize what she's saying mm-hmm. in the moment. But then we'll take that little phrase and we'll make it into the Jennyism of the Day. And we have a T-shirt line, a hat line, and several other for a local kind of community that we have here.
Nice.
With Jenny. Yeah.
That's very, very cool. I think that's kind of interesting and fun. You're also a coach, a trainer, a speaker. What's your experience been? Because I know there's a lot of people that want to do that. How hard is it to actually jump in there and be an author and be a coach and a trainer?
If it was easy, everybody would do it. To go in there and do those things, because I have about 2 or 3 speaking events that I do every single week, mm-hmm. and you have to go after what you really want to do. So my dream stage, I thought, oh, it's a dream stage, but I'm going to put it down for my first year of speaking. And I actually was awarded my dream stage just a few days ago, where I get to go and speak in front of 500 other entrepreneurs.
Wow.
So I'm pretty excited about that. But you have to just do it, and like, don't just go and do it, but learn from the people that have done it before you. That's how I've gotten so good at different businesses. Mm-hmm. If somebody's done what I want to do before, so I'll read their book, or I'll take a class with them, or I'll go to their conference where they put decades into days.
Mm-hmm.
And even minutes now with podcasts, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
so much information.
And you can times two the speed of it. So you can listen to like double the amount of content that much more quickly and digest it. As long as it don't start sounding like a chipmunk, it does work.
Yeah.
So that was my attempt at humor. So you're part of a Masterminds Ooh. Business Academy. What is that about?
Masterminds Business Academy is to help people, either brand new entrepreneurs or people that are wanting to franchise their business. We come together and we talk about the things they need to do to set themselves up for success. Because I have a ton of people that come to me and say, hey, Christy, I want to franchise my business.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, hey, have you got systems and support built into your business? And they go, well, no. I don't, but I'd like the franchise. And I said, you cannot duplicate yourself if you don't have systems and supports and operations built into your business. So if your idea is to franchise your business, you need to have systems, support, and operations set up from the very, very beginning. Or when you're thinking about franchising, you need to get a system for your payroll. You need to get a system for your financials. You have to get a system for your calendar. You have to have it all right there so that the franchisee knows from how to get the phones to ring, and once the phone rings, how to walk the customer through the process to the very back end to keep the customer informed about your services. So no matter if it's a restaurant and getting people to walk in the doors, or if it's a service-based business, they all have to have a same sort of system to be able to duplicate yourself. You can't duplicate yourselves on a recipe that you just throw together every Monday morning, right? You have to know exactly what to put in the recipe for the cake to turn out correctly every single time in every single location.
Yeah. I know a lot of times, a lot of small business owners, they know how to do it, but they can't really communicate it that well to make themselves franchisable, even if they don't want to be a franchise, where they could say, I can walk out the door today and I know my door is going to close at 5 o'clock. If I have a breakfast restaurant, or midnight, if I have a dinner restaurant, I know who's going to clean up the back room, the front of the house, and so on and so forth. A lot of business owners can't wrap that around their heads to sort of teach people how to correctly do things and how they want it done. I'm really excited that you have that, because that's an amazing tool, an amazing value you're giving to people. So I guess my next question is, you are a podcaster and you are a content creator. What's your experience been in the podcast world, like getting it started and getting it built up?
I am still like a newbie in the podcast world. It's been a really interesting kind of journey. I started in one way, and then we've kind of evolved it, and we're in our second season now. You have to market a podcast just like you would market a business. So you have to go from really obscurity to oversaturation, and you also have to think about where your target market is. So my target market on my podcast is for my customers. I want to give them tips on doing it yourself, handyman services, doing it yourself, housekeeping services. And people go, you're crazy. You're taking money out of your pocket. Actually, I'm not. I'm adding more value to my customers, so that they, if they don't want to call us, let's add value and help them out. So when they do come to the bigger projects, they'll call sometimes spouse. And then also we do business tips every single week. So that also helps entrepreneurs. So it's a little bit different than most podcasts. We have the three founders of Sometimes Spouse that talk about specific topics. I don't interview a lot of people or anything like that. We talk about articles that we've written that week, because we all write an article a week. So
you're pushing a lot of content, it sounds like, onto your website, where you have like five or six new things on your website on a weekly basis between the podcasts, the blog articles. I think you also mentioned before we started the show that you do videos as well. So you have a good amount of things going out there. I gotta say, like, it's amazing to hear because I'm very much in the camp of just sharing knowledge, because there's some people that will listen to a podcast I'll do on SEO, and they'll say, you know what, I want to have Ed do my SEO because he really is an expert and everything he's telling me is useful, and I just don't have the time to do it, or I'm not going to do it as well as he can, so I'm going to have him step up to the plate and do that. It sounds like that value you're doing as well for the house cleaning and handyman repair. If I were in your area listening to it, I'd be like, you know what? I might just have her or her husband run over to my house and fix this. Because it sounds like they know what they're talking about, and I probably may hurt myself if I try to do it. That's really, really cool. So how did you meet your husband?
Max and I met when I was a furniture salesman at Hiley Myers Furniture in Nevada, Missouri, 24 years ago this month. And he walked in, and I was a top salesman, even though I was like a 19-year-old kid.
Mm-hmm.
I was a top salesman in the company, and they had over 800 stores for recliners. So everybody that walked into the store, I would sell them a recliner. So Max walks in, big old guy. He's 6'4", and he was kind of balding at the time, even though he wasn't that old. And he walked in, and he worked nights at the time in a factory. And when he worked in the factory, and he would get all dirty, and he was getting ready to go to work, and I thought, this guy's kind of handsome, but he's all dirty. And so he was looking at the recliners, because he worked nights, and sometimes he'd just fall asleep in the chair, and this chair he had wasn't very comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went over to the recliners, and I'm showing him all the recliners. Back then, I would wear dresses and stuff. And I said, hey, Max, why don't you try this recliner? This is a tall man's recliner, blah, 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 blah. And he said, no, I'm all dirty. I'm getting ready to go to work. Why don't you sit in it for me? So I sat in the recliner, and I popped up my legs. And Max always said it was that moment when he knew he was going to marry me. So I sold him the recliner. And the next day, he sent me a dozen carnations, I think it was,
wow,
carnations, and asked me out on a date. And I thought, whoa, he's a stalker. I don't know.
Yeah, being a 19-year-old woman, you're like, wait a minute.
Yeah, who is this guy? But I thought it was really strange, because that day I sold to three or four people, and every single one of them, their last name was Ogle, and none of them were related.
Wow.
And then, so the next day he asked me out, and I said, okay, I'll go with you out on a Sunday night, because, you know, Friday and Saturday, I was 19, I was partying. I didn't want to interfere with that. So I went out with him on a Sunday night, and we went to a movie and dinner. And I remember at the end of the date, he goes, hey, do you want to come over to my house and watch a movie? And I thought, no, I don't even know you. Why would I come over for a movie? Like, who is this guy? And so he kept asking me out. We started dating. And within a few years, we were engaged, and we've been together ever since.
Wow, that's cool. Like, it's always kind of interesting to hear someone's story of how they met the one. But everyone has a different kind of way they've met someone, and it's kind of cool that you're both in business together. Was he like kind of your rock when you have a bad day in your business, or is it kind of the opposite where you're his kind of rock as the business owner, be like, oh, let's pick each other up and we're going to keep on moving forward? Who's like kind of like the supporter, or is it kind of equal?
So Max and I working together, it is a lot different than working with like your work spouse, your work wife, or your work husband. So
mm-hmm.
One thing that we had to learn really, really quickly was to leave work at work and home is home, because we have three children together.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to learn that. So we've had some difficult days. It hasn't always been roses and butterflies in business or in franchising or anything we do. Like, we have some hard times. And the interesting thing about Max and I's relationship is some days he's the rock because I need that.
Mm-hmm.
And then some days I'm the rock because that's what I need.
Gotcha.
So we can kind of feel each other out. And like, you're having a rough day. Okay, let's sit down, let's chat about it, let's get this worked out so we mm-hmm. can move on. But the great thing about Crystal, Max, and I together in this relationship of building this franchising empire
mm-hmm.
is we work beautifully together. And if somebody is off one day, we can kind of see and pick up the slack where that person needs a little bit of time and a little bit of space, because it is not all sunshine and rainbows. You get kicked in the face pretty often. If you're building anything kind of epic and you're building a legacy, mm-hmm. you're going to have those growth building days.
Yeah.
You need somebody to lean on. It is totally normal to have that song 1 Million Reasons Why to run through your head, like, there's so many millions of reasons that I should just go and work for somebody else, right?
Yeah, but being an entrepreneur, I know the feeling.
Yeah, you'd miss out on that freedom and flexibility. And when your kid calls to say, hey, Dad, let's go ride motorcycles for the day, and you can go, okay, let's go ride motorcycles for the day. I'm going to drop everything, right? Because you have that. Mm-hmm. If you're working at JOB, you have to ask permission.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely 100% right. So you have another partner. Her name was Christy?
Crystal.
Yeah. How did you get connected to Crystal? Like, what's the story there? Like, was it a family friend? Was it a high school student friendship that you had? Was it your husband's friend? Is it like a relative, family member, one of your sides? Or was it like a key employee that you're like, we have to make this person a partner?
No, Crystal and I were social workers before, and we shared an office before, sometimes spouse, and we actually became fast friends, even though I was kind of mean to her when she started as a social worker. And so when I thought of sometimes spouse, I thought she's the one that really has to go with us on this journey. So I actually offered her at lunch the next day after coming up with the idea, do you want 50% or do you want 33%? And she chose 33% at the time, which is, she says, one of the biggest mistakes of her life. So she's a third partner. We always have built this business together. We've been best friends now for about 12 or 13 years, and business partners for about 6 or 7.
Wow, that's cool. It's always interesting because there's two camps that I've always seen when I talk to entrepreneurs. It's either the entrepreneur is like, look, I'm going alone. I am a lone wolf. It's me against the world. Or you have the entrepreneur that's sort of like, okay, I'm going to have someone that I'm going to entrust with this baby of a business to be successful. So it's kind of cool to hear your perspective on that. So you're an author. What books have you written?
I've written Show Me Success, which is on Amazon. I self-published it. Mm-hmm. That was my first book, and I'm working on my second one.
What's the second one about?
It's about franchising.
Nice. Well, this is a good conversation we're having today because you're kind of can like roll out that idea. I didn't know you were writing a second book. It wasn't like something we pre-talked about. It just kind of, I just shared that. So you have three kids. I don't know how old they are. Have you and your husband had the conversation of like, this is going to be our legacy for them? Or are you more of the mindset of like, whatever they want to do to be happy in life, we're going to be supportive? I had one of my friends in college, he was an entrepreneurship major, and his father had a pool business and was just literally going to give him a pool business, like a very successful pool business. And he was like, I don't want to do that. I don't want that as a business. You're a parent, what's your feelings about like your kids being involved in a business as a second generation?
So in the very beginning, I said, no kids. Like, no kids at the business. I don't want to see that, because my kids were little at the time. They were like 9, 10, and 11 when we started Sometimes Spouse. But I realized pretty quickly, as a mom of three and wanting to put family first and having that freedom and flexibility, I wanted my kids involved in what we were building, because we knew from the pretty early that this was going to be a legacy that was going to live long past us and long past our children, the way that we're building it now. Mm-hmm. So actually, our first receptionist was my 14-year-old daughter.
Nice.
And then we ended up hiring somebody when she went back to school that year, and she still works in the business until today. She's 19 now, and she works two jobs. She has to pay for her own college, so she works those two jobs to pay for school, and she's going in January. Mm-hmm. My youngest daughter since she's about 14, has been in the cleaning department, and she'll train new cleaners over the summer times because she's so good. And then my son also helps out with the business. So they've all been very involved from the kind of the very beginning after I changed my mindset. They passed out cards. They'll go door to door. They'll do everything that they need to do to make a little bit of extra cash. Everything they do, they pay for their own school clothes. And like I said, they're 16, 17, and 19. People can't believe that when we go to a nail salon, I make the girls pay for it out of their own money. My son wants something. He has to pay for it out of his own money. And they save half of everything they make. So it's nice. Totally from us instilling that in them in the business. And there's only one of them that is interested in working and carrying on the Sometime Spouse legacy. So I'm working with Natalie to be the future CEO of Sometime Spouse.
That's awesome. How do your franchisees feel about having that relationship with you? Are they also family minded business people that are like, I'm going to pass this franchise on to my like little boy or little girl? Or is that something you talk about or you talked about with them on day one? Or like, how did that all come about? What's their mindset?
So in the very beginning, we didn't understand how important it was to get the right mindset of franchisees in through Sometime Spouse. So we didn't vet them correctly in the very beginning. We didn't understand how important that was. Mm-hmm. So people would write checks for Sometime Spouses, go home, eat bonbons, and watch Days of Our Lives, not do anything, and then call us up and go, this isn't working. And I'd be like, well, are you doing your networking? Are you going out and telling people about Sometime Spouse? And they'd go, well, I put a Facebook page up. So even though we trained them, they thought that it was a lottery ticket when they purchased the franchises. It's not that way. Even if you buy a Starbucks, a McDonald's, or a Chick-fil-A, still have to be out in the business. So we learned a pretty rough lesson from the very beginning by getting some franchisees that weren't vetted correctly. Whereas now with Sometime Spouse, when you get started, we have those conversations with you. What does this business mean to you? What are you doing to build your business and put your family first? We want this to be something that you can build together. And people that want to get started in Sometime Spouse have to be a managing partner with us for 6 to 12 months before they're awarded a franchise now. So instead of going after that McDonald's model where you're going after people that are investing and not really working in the business, and you can walk into one where you won't even sit on the toilet seat, or one that's, you know, really, really nice, we're going with that Chick-fil-A model where every single one of the franchises is set up exactly like home office, where you've got a husband and wife working together to build a business together. Both of them are invested in the future of their family and helping other people to put their family first, because our mission is to help 1,204,732 people put their family first.
Wow. That's a very exact number. How'd you come up with that number?
My husband, best friend, and I sat down one day and we said, okay, what numbers are important in your life? And so we talked about those different numbers. And I'm a firm believer that any number that ends in zero is a big old fat lie. So we came up with that number, the 1,204,732 people that we wanted to help, because these were evident numbers in our lives that kept popping out. We wanted to put a ding on the universe. I remember as a social worker, they beat that out of you. Like, you can't change the world. Just go out there and do what you can. You can't change the world. Just go do your job and get this paperwork filled out. And they beat it out of you in about 3 weeks that you can't change the world. Now, I firmly believe that you can. I want to put my ding on this world, and I want to put a ding on the universe. So when I'm going down in that box, at the end of my life, and I close my eyes for the last time, I know my legacy of Sometime Spouse and Family First is going to live way past me for generations and generations, just like Sam Walton went from generation to generation.
Yeah, that's true. Like Sam Walton, there's a very, very famous story of him when he was flying over some state somewhere in the United States, and he looked out the window and he knew in that area that there was a Walmart, and he noticed that the Walmart parking lot was not filled. And he's like, land the plane. And he landed the plane, and he wanted to know from the manager why the Walmart parking lot wasn't full with cars and what they needed to do to address it. And it's kind of nice and refreshing to hear that passion isn't just limited to one person. Someone like yourself, it has that same drive and the same passion in your own way, with your own set of values to do something amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So, I know it's kind of a roundabout way to sort of share something. So like in reference to, what you come up with now, I noticed you said like earlier that your partners and yourself, you come up with a bunch of different things for like different articles. Like, do you brainstorm articles, or how do you do that? Like, what's your creative process?
So there's three different kinds of relationships. There's three different kinds of entrepreneurs or business owners when you get to really down to it. And at your core, you're one of these three. So I am a manager leader. Crystal is a skilled producer, and Max is an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
So we looked at those things that we're all really, really good at. So manager, leader, I'm really good at business. I'm really good at marketing. I'm really good at sales. I'm really good at starting the business. I'm really good at getting innovative ideas to keep the business running. So personally, that's what I write all my articles on. So I can sit down in 8 hours, write 20 or 30 articles about different topics.
So
Crystal and Max are the...
Go on. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Crystal and Max are the same way. So Crystal's the skilled producer. So from the very beginning, she was the one that could look at the different processes that needed to be done. So she writes an article every week about home cleaning or keeping your home eco-friendly, because that's what she's passionate about. And Max, he's the handy guy. He's the entrepreneur that could start a different business every week if I'd let him.
Mm-hmm.
And he is really good at the handyman or the do-it-yourself. He can tell you exactly how to, this week, I think it was doing-it-yourself faucet replacement. So he can do that relatively quickly, and he'll just tell it to me and I'll write his article. I don't know. I know about a lot of stuff that he's done now because I'll help him kind of transcribe that article.
Nice.
But that's what all three of us do. And then we take it a step further and we'll talk about it on our podcast. And then we'll also talk about it in our lives.
Nice. Very, very nice. Now, I noticed a lot of your franchises are in the center part of the United States. Are you willing to like, I'm in Florida. Are you willing if like someone heard this podcast and they're here in Florida, I have people all over the country that actually listen to the podcast, to go beyond that geographic area, or do you keep everyone nearby because you feel comfortable that they're in driving distance?
Yeah. So we actually were focusing on Texas until the end of the year, about mid-2020. And then mid-2020, we're going to go nationwide. We're actually in about five different states right now.
Mm-hmm.
But we plan on going nationwide next year. And then by 2025, we're going to go worldwide.
Nice. Well, if you don't mind, could you share a little of your contact information, because if there is someone that's like, man, I really want to give her a phone call, do you mind doing that? Are you comfortable doing that?
Oh yeah, I am totally cool in doing that. So if you want to contact me, all you have to do to get started or find out more about Sometimes Spouse is go to our Facebook page, Sometimes Spouse. Mm-hmm. We've also got Sometimes Spouse Headquarters on Facebook, and you can find me on Facebook, Christy Kinney Ogle.
Mm-hmm.
You can also call 254 315-1922 to find out more information about Sometimes Spouse or to talk to me. That's actually to our office. Mm-hmm. And then you can go on LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm also on Twitter. I'm also on Instagram. You can find us under Sometimes Spouse, or you can find me under Christy Kenny Ogle on any of those platforms. So I'm all over everywhere. We're also on YouTube. So you can, and we have the podcast. So you can get it all. There's lots of different ways.
So if they look up Sometimes Spouse online, they may be able to find you.
Yeah. Google Sometimes Spouse and you'll see a picture of me up there and you'll be able to find me. And you can contact any of our franchise locations and they will get in touch with me.
Cool. That's really helpful information because I know a lot of times someone's like gets excited and I don't want to just have them wait and wait or just not ask that question. So thank you for sharing that. That's really, really helpful. I guess that I could keep asking you questions in reference to everything that you're doing in reference to the franchise and being an author and a coach. But one of the things I like to ask every once in a while, just for fun, is like everyone asks like what's the best tips you can give to someone starting a business. I kind of have a warped sense of humor. I like to ask what are the worst tips that you can that you would say like don't ever do this. This is possibly the worst thing you could do if you're going to start a business. What would be like your top five just for fun?
Do not take business advice from your friends and family because they haven't done it before. Don't listen to the negative Nellies in the room. If you would not be willing to trade bank accounts with somebody, do not take business advice from them.
Mm-hmm.
I hear that all the time. Well, my mom said, well, has your mom started a multi-million-dollar business and scaled it throughout the United States? No, then don't take business advice from your mama. I don't take business advice from my mama or my brother because they've never done it before. So don't listen to them. Talk to somebody that has done what you want to do. Mm-hmm. If you want to start a business, go and talk to somebody that's in a business that's similar to yours. Most of the time, people will talk to you about their business because it is their fourth or fifth child. They want to tell you about what's going on in their business. They want to take those decades and put them into days so you don't make those financial mistakes that they've made. So talk to somebody else that's been in business. You can get a hold of people. Look them up on YouTube. Mm-hmm. Go to YouTube. Put in what you're really looking for, and you can find out if there's other businesses that have done what you've done. I promise you, there is no business out there that has never been done before. Go and figure it out. You can find it. YouTube, podcast, Google, use it. You have information at your fingertips. Don't just think, I'll do it this way. Because people have made the same mistakes you're going to make, and it could save you decades worth of time and hundreds of thousands of dollars. Also, read books. Read Dale Carnegie, How to Win Friends and Influence People, because whatever business you're in, you're dealing with people. Mm-hmm. Read Napoleon Hill's How to Think and Grow Rich. Learn from the best marketers in the world, like Grant Cardone and Russell Brunson. Read their books. You can get so much further ahead. I didn't get into personal growth and development until year three. Mm-hmm. And if I would have done that in year one, man, I don't know where I'd be today. You want to go from obscurity to oversaturation. So when people tell you, don't work so hard, don't listen to them because they're going to retire at 65 by living that 40-40-40 scam. They're working 40 hours a week for 40 years to retire on 40% of their income. You have to grind. You have to get up in the morning and work on your business. Every free moment, work on your business. Work, work, work. Now take some time out for play when you can afford it.
Mm-hmm.
Until you can afford it, don't take the time off for play. Do it. Work. Get tired. You're going to get hit in the face. Keep going. Take action. So I know that's way more than five.
Sorry. No. It's good. I was just listening. I was like, yeah, you know, I think after a certain point in time as an entrepreneur, you have to have a mindset of of just sort of saying, I'm gonna get up and do this. I had the most terrible day, and tomorrow is a new day and it's fresh, and I'm just going to restart my brain as if yesterday didn't happen, or it happened better mm-hmm. than I remembered it did, or I'm just gonna ignore it and live in my own little happy place, and I'm going to put 10% more into this to really make it successful, because yesterday it didn't turn out too well. I mean you gave such amazing advice. I hope some college students are tuning in and taking copious notes, because this is to me equal to like a great possible education. So I could keep going with questions, but I know we're right around the 45 minute mark. Is there any like final thoughts you want to share for someone that's maybe thinking about starting a business, maybe not in your industry, just something completely different, like they want to build computers at home or something, that you could say, hey, this is one thing you really need to keep in mind?
Well, even if they're starting in my industry, I would give them the same advice, because there's plenty of business out there for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
But there's two things. Number one, 80% of any chokehold on any business, 80% of it is the mindset of the owner. So we want to make sure that the mind, keep going, keep your mind fresh. And the other thing is always put your family first. Always make time for them. You only have 940 Saturdays between the day that your child is born and that they go off to college. So make sure and spend time with them. You've only got them for 18 years.
Nice. Thank you so much, Christy, for being on my podcast radio show. You have brought a tremendous amount of value, and for all those people that have tuned in today, I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you keep on listening. Share my podcast with your friends and family, and I hope you have a wonderful morning, afternoon, and evening. Take care.